We're happy to have in the studio tonight Joe Pollack, and Joe is normally here in a different mode. Usually he's carrying his guitar in, ready to sing some songs and talk about music, but tonight we're going to do something a little different. And this actually, as I learned after talking to Joe, is his first love, and that is his study, and which has been happening for some time, of tracking and survival skills. Joe, welcome to the Roadhouse.
Yeah, it's good to be here and talk about this.
Yeah, I think so too. You know, when I first heard that that was one of your interests, I go back to being a child and watching Westerns on TV and movies, and the scout, you know, gets off the horse and he looks around, looks at the ground, and then he tells everybody, you know, there were six of them, they were going this direction. And you even elaborated a little further when we talked about it just a minute ago.
Right. A Native American scout could very likely tell, you know, whether it was another Native American riding a horse or, you know, a white man, because of the way that they would ride, you know, the way that the natives were used to riding in the saddle. The horse's feet would actually register differently on the ground. And so they could tell a lot. They could probably even tell if they were armed people or not armed.
It just amazes me. You know, I was always just so impressed and in awe that somebody could actually do this when I was young. And I got to say that I still am, mm-hmm. because it's not something that most people would even imagine taking up, because it seems like it's a lost art.
It really is a lost art. And if you take into consideration that the native people had all day, every day, just to focus on their environment. All they had was their environment. And so for them, they would notice the tiniest little thing. And it was important for their survival to be able to notice those tiniest little things. And it became whoever was better at it was going to outmaneuver, you know, the other tribes or their enemies.
When did you take this idea seriously for yourself and say, hey, I want to learn how to do that?
I think it was when I was about 16 years old, and Tom Brown Jr. came out with this book called The Tracker, and it was in a Reader's Digest condensed, you know, story back then. And they mentioned a school, and so I was, you know, in my teens, and as soon as I was able to, I went to the school, and that was in 1982. And incidentally, I took that course in May of 1982, and the day after the course ended, I moved to Grand Marais.
Really?
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah, it was that. Wow. That had been my plan. I quit my I took the class, quit my job, and moved up here.
That's impressive. That was that had to be something that made a big impression on you.
Oh, you mean moving here or going to the school?
Well, probably both, but going to the school.
I'm still going there now. I've been there two or three times this year, taking the last course was an advanced tracking course. But I go back pretty much at least once a year for, you know, to take another course that's offered. And so, yeah, it speaks well for the school, because I'm not, you know, a rich person by any means. Mm-hmm. None of us are, but I mean, it's not a cheap school, but it's not overly expensive either. Mm-hmm. But it costs money to pay for the class and to drive out to New Jersey or take a plane.
But it's become one of your passions.
Absolutely.
And then money is Absolutely. Less of an object.
Yeah, and that's why I live here. We're really blessed here with, some of the best wilderness around.
Mm-hmm. When in the winter, I can see tracks. I mm-hmm. can kind of get an idea, okay, there's two or three deer here, there's whatever, because they're so obvious mm-hmm. in the snow. Of course, that varies upon conditions. But in the summertime, things are not so obvious.
Right.
How do you get into the... What do you look for, let's say, if you've seen that there's something has crossed this trail or mm-hmm. crossed a road? Where do you begin to even look?
Yeah, it can be really daunting at first. It's like, it's kind of like learning to read for a kindergartner, really. In tracks in snow are really easy to read, but when you get on the, you know, just about any other kind of ground, it gets a little confusing. Yeah, I can see that's a deer's track, but if I start to follow it, is it this deer? Which deer is it that I'm following? And if they travel this path regularly, am I now on yesterday's tracks and not today's? You know, so it becomes the way that, I guess the best way that I would say it is that if you were to just study a square foot of ground, just watch it for an hour, and, you know, make it even a kind of a difficult patch of ground to see a track on. You know, this was an exercise in my standard class at the tracker school. Hmm. Stare at a piece of ground for an hour, you know, and just take note of everything that you see in it, and then step on that piece of ground, and it'll be like, oh man, I've massively changed this piece of ground. But if you had just, you know, stepped on it and looked, you probably might not even be able to see your track. So it's just a matter of having taken the time to, I've got in my notes here, the baseline. If you want to learn to track, if you want to learn what is a track, then you need to learn what the baseline is. So the native people had all kinds of time to learn their baseline, basically all day, every day. You know, so just staring at the ground, studying it as if it's a wonderful science project, you know, something that is just like, because it really is, it's more fun than watching TV, really. It really is. And so that's what I recommend, is learn the baseline, and then you'll be able to see that track. And then if you come back to that track every 4 hours or maybe once a day, you'll see how it deteriorates. By doing that time after time after time, then when you see those deer tracks, you know, on regular everyday soil that may be hard packed and you can just barely see that indentation, it's going to jump out much more as being obvious, and also as to when it was made. So
So a lot of it is learning, is being in the woods, spending the time, as you said, by following the same route, so you know when something's different.
Yeah, learning the baseline is really important.
Yeah, and how can you tell it? I know a lot of times there's not an obvious track.
Right.
It's not like you can see, differentiate that deer's parts of his feet. How can you tell that something was there, even though you're studying the baseline and what it is?
Do you mean like on really hard pack, like on rock?
Yeah, on harder material.
Well, what happens is that even if you sweep a floor, take any hardwood floor, you sweep it, 2 hours later, there's a layer of dust on there. And so light shines off of dust. You know, it's you know, and the more severe the angle, the easier it is to see. But basically, it's a matter of training the eye to see subtle light differences, and it takes a lot of practice. But eventually, it's like they stand out as like smudges, is what I want to say. But basically, what it is it's the ability to read the light refractions off of the dust and grit compressions that are on the rock.
Wow.
Or the lack thereof, you know, like if the, it's probably going to be that the dust stuck to the foot of the animal. But that is one of the major, factors involved in tracking on hard surfaces.
You know, I listening to you now, I try to think of my own life and how we're all being bombarded all day by so many things, that my concentration level, I don't think ever gets to the level that you're talking about anymore.
Right, and it's kind of like fly fishing in that way, is that if a person just makes that attempt, they're going to find out that they will actually, it's a form of meditation to do that, because you are focusing, and actually, I agree with you. And then going out and maybe providing 15 minutes even a day of just that kind of study, that kind of focused study, it's a form of meditation, and it relieves a lot of stress. Mm-hmm. You know, just to take that time. So if you think about it, that 15 minutes you lose doing that, or that half hour you lose doing that, you're probably going to gain. You don't have to sleep that much. You're going to gain and not having doctor bills. So
yeah. Now, how much time in general do you get to spend working on your technique and working on your skill as far as tracking goes?
As far as tracking? Well, my first love of this whole nature thing was the survival part of it.
Okay.
And so, you know, the ability to survive on a piece of land with nothing. And just the, oh gosh, there's so many facets of what the Native American scouts could do, like, you know, like the shamans and the medicine people could basically communicate with plants. You know, it wasn't just handed down from generation to generation. They actually sensed what plant could be, you know, they sensed what plant was needed for a particular malady. And so that really captured me for a lot of years, and so a lot of what the Tracker School teaches is how to get in touch with our instincts. For instance, I just saw a fawn this morning just outside my studio, and it ran away and reminded me of a story that Tom often tells, is that if a fawn's mother dies, there's a 90% chance that fawn will survive. But nobody teaches the fawn what to eat. It already knows. In fact, every animal already knows, including human beings. We already know what's edible out there. I'm not recommending that anybody, you know, do that, because we've lost the ability to be in contact with our own instincts. But getting back in touch with that ability is something that I was really interested in, spent a lot of time doing. And you know, the way Tom teaches it is to, you know, find plants that you don't know, sense what they may be used for medicinally, edibility, whatever, and then consult the books, you know, and check yourself that way. He doesn't recommend you just go and, you know, I think this is edible, you know.
A lot of this has to be just uncluttering.
Uncluttering as far as
your own mind goes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I didn't mean to get away from the subject of tracking. So it's only been in the last couple of years that I've gotten more intensely into working with the tracking, and I'm just absolutely fascinated with it now. But I am relatively a newcomer to a really focused study of tracking.
Mm-hmm. But you began, as you said, by learning a lot of survival techniques. And when I think of survival, you know, you think of what shelter,
right,
water, food,
fire.
And fire.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are things that you've developed for yourself so you can survive anywhere?
Yeah, that's the basic four. And I won't say that I'm an expert in any of those either. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm a fairly distracted member of our society too. But I...
I don't think so, Joe.
But I, you know, relative to most people, I do have a lot of experience with it. And, mm-hmm. and you know, so yeah, there's shelter is the number one survival skill. You know, you there's instances where you'll die in a few minutes without shelter. I think the next listed one is water. You know, depending on circumstance, water and fire are number two. Of course, food, you can go days without food. I just wanted to say about tracking too that I was always interested in it, and I always learned each animal has a gait pattern, and I've studied them extensively in snow, studying the gait patterns. You know, it just was a matter of, I didn't get to the really difficult surfaces until recently.
Yeah, and the gait pattern depends, I suppose, whether they're in stress, they're running, or they're normal pace, or whatever's happening.
Yeah, it really does, but there's very specific gait patterns to each group of animals. Like all the weasel families have a similar gait, and as do the canines. And the mice, you know, and as far as the number of toes on the front foot and back foot. And so it's actually, it's fairly relatively easy to tell what kind of animal made which track. The more difficult part is your speed in the ability to follow that animal.
If at the same pace the animal's moving.
Yeah, exactly.
Huh. Just differentiating the tracks would be, you know, of enough of a problem for me, even in a good footprint. So you have to be a real detail-oriented person
and I, to be able
to pick this up.
I think it's been lost in my past that I've actually spent hundreds of hours doing it.
Let's go back to the survival part of where this all began and your interest in that. And you talk about shelter being number one. What types of shelter, if you were, let's put you in, let's pick one that sounds romantic, Lost Lake area, because you're lost. And
you mean, you know, like Lost Lake, Cook County?
Yeah, okay. Somewhere up
yeah,
there.
Yeah, okay.
And you've got to do something quickly to build a shelter. What's your first basic thought? How do I do that?
Well, it does depend on the situation. Most basically, what I would be building would be a debris shelter. And if you think of like what you need to keep you warm, say it's going to be 30 degrees at night, is a sleeping bag, right? Mm-hmm. How do I replace my sleeping bag? Well, I need insulation. I need trapped air. And so ground debris is going to do that for us. And it's going to be fairly light and fluffy. And then finding a way to be able to trap that ground debris and its fluffiness, but to be packed tight enough so that air doesn't blow through it around my body, is my sleeping bag. And so there's what's called the debris hut, which is basically, I'm not good with describing these things, but it's kind of a low triangular shaped thing, which you pack in. It basically, it looks like a great big squirrel's nest.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a great big squirrel's nest. And then you also pack the inside with leaves, the softest debris that you can find. And it's, you know, really quite warm. Yeah. Sometimes we don't really, a way to, you know, one of the ways of getting around that, or cheating, not cheating, but you can stuff your clothes with debris. And people might think, oh my gosh, that's, but look, if it's a freezing rain and you've got to move and you're already shivering and you're on the run, you're not going to care much about comfort. You're going to just grab some wet debris, believe it or not. You're already wet anyway, it's raining. Stuff your clothes and just keep moving, and you will sweat. You know, you will sweat because you've got to, you know, if you stuff 2 inches of debris around inside your shirts, you know, between your undershirt and your shirt, you've got a 2-inch, you know, jacket on.
So you want to find some insulation to keep warm, basically, is what it is.
Yeah.
And then it's a matter of finding water.
Right. Water that's drinkable, you know.
And let's say that you can't find water. That is there a way to filter water? When you have nothing else to...
Right, and that is a trickier one, because, you know, water is number two in importance, but because of, like, Giardia and stuff, we need to boil water. So the ability to make fire without matches then becomes extremely important, and that's something I have worked with quite a bit. And I've taught some courses at the North House and other places on just the bow drill fire. I'm not good at the hand drill fire. It's just the bow drill fire that I've gotten really good at, and I can usually get it with just about any kind of wood. And so that becomes really important. And of course, once you get a fire going, you can rock boil. You know, you can put hot rocks in the fire, make a birch bark container, which is really can be constructed quite quickly, or, you know, cold burn get a hunk of wood and cold burn out a hollow in it and rock boil your water. And so there takes a little doing to doing all of that. But, you know, when you're in a survival situation, all you have is time. You know, it may not seem like you have much of it, but you've all of a sudden you've got, I've got 8 hours to do all this. You know, I have hard time finding 8 hours normally. So you can look at it as kind of a gift too. And just not panicking, panicking and saying, you know what, I can do this. I know that I need shelter. So the ability to make fire without matches is actually extremely important.
And one thing, now that I've heard a little bit about tracking, if you're lost, you can always backtrack.
Yes, yes. And that's
where
what
most people can't.
Yeah, and that's what's been such a gift for me now, is it's so easy for me to see my own tracks on just about any surface now. But I'm not very fast, but I could backtrack myself out. But I would like to get good enough so that I could, like I've heard of somebody, you know, people getting lost in the woods. I would like to, you know, get fast enough and get a tracking team going, like there are in a lot of other areas of this country, so that when somebody becomes lost, the tracking team is the first thing they do, they call. Because if somebody gets lost and they track up the area, it becomes a lot more difficult to find where the lost person's tracks. So you got to do a lot of circling. So that's what I would like to do, is number one, get really fast at it and create some tracking teams, and then hopefully work with law enforcement and get them used to the idea that people can track people sometimes where dogs can't track people because, mm-hmm. you know, dogs are dependent on their nose, and in some weather conditions that won't work.
Exactly. Hmm. Well, this is just a fascinating hobby, Joe. We've been speaking with Joe Pollack, and as I mentioned, normally when we're speaking to Joe, we're talking about music. And this time we're talking about music of a different kind.
It sure is.
And that's music that's laid out on the ground. And it's just, I'm still a little in awe
yeah.
that you can concentrate that hard to manage this. And I know that you've mastered that, and I'm pretty darn impressed. That just Perfect. Sounds great. Joe, I want to thank you so much for coming in and talking about tracking and survival, and we'd like to talk about that more in the future.
Yeah, I really enjoy talk. I could talk for hours. I actually forgot. I lost track of time. It's not like doing the guitar thing where I'm a little worried about it. It's just this is my passion. I could just, I forgot I was on the radio, actually.
Oh, that's great. Joe Pollack, we want to thank him so much for joining us here tonight.